throw balls far. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM and 1240 AM. The Sports Animal, glad to have you along for the next hour as we get into all kinds of different things.
You all right?
Yeah, I was just seeing. Okay, anyhow. Get into all kinds of different things. Man, some potential issues looming in the NFL as far as the protocols that they are using. Bunch of teams have big-time COVID lists. Most of the players are asymptomatic. And you know what you're starting to hear for the first time? You're starting to hear whispers of something that I've asked this question since this since we figured out what it was. Let's say June of 2020. As we're trying to get sports back to be played, I've asked this question. That question is, at what point will COVID be dealt with the same way as any other injury or any other illness? That means it's the player's choice to play. You're starting to finally hear that sentiment from people around the league. And you want to know why? Because COVID is just about to affect who makes the playoffs.
Yeah.
When you look at some of the teams that have these long lists of players, Cleveland, the Washington, whatever the hell they're called, the Rams have shut down their practice. So you've got these teams now that have asymptomatic players testing positive while not being sick, and they're starting to say, wait a minute. I feel fine. Why can't I play?
Right.
Personnel people, I feel fine. Why can't I play? It'll be interesting to see how this goes. And even, gasp, Jared. National liberal sports writers are asking the same questions. It's finally not Clay Travis on an island by himself making these points. Other people are starting to make these points. And here's another one I want you to think about.
Okay.
97% of this league is vaccinated. And the numbers are climbing with the Omicron, which one, you know what one stands for with Omicron?
No, what?
One death globally so far.
Oh, my goodness.
One. But it's, you know, obviously spreading. I think South Africa, nobody even went to the hospital. So all this is going on, and the numbers are spiking. And you know what that leads to? That leads to certain state governments wanting to control you. And guess where the Super Bowl is this year, Jared?
That would be Los Angeles.
Should the NFL start thinking about – actually, should the NFL have already moved it yesterday? Because you know what's coming.
Oh, they're going to
– come February in California. You know what's coming. Should the NFL think about that as we move along? I want to hear what everybody else thinks, too, on that. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer with what's coming out there with the restriction put back into place.
Yes.
Get that thing out of there.
Yeah.
If you want to even have anything nearing a semblance of a normal Super Bowl week. So we've got lots of NFL. Oh, by the way, we'll hit another NFL topic at the top here with what happened overnight. Signing day wrap-up, or at least the early signing day wrap-up. My gosh. Is this thing really new? Is it new?
What's new?
The paying. Did you see Jimbo yesterday talking about the NIL on Feinbaum's show?
No, I heard what Kiffin said.
Jimbo had not necessarily the same thing, but similar. And it all started, so all this conversation goes back to yesterday morning when the number one player on Rivals overall in the country flipped from Florida State to Jackson State, Coach Prime. And then it filters out that not only Barstool Sports, but also Penn Gaming, Penn National Gaming. You know what that is? It's gambling.
Oh, okay.
It's gambling. Agreed to pay him a couple million bucks. as part of an NIL deal. So lots to unpack there. OU and OSU's early signing classes are complete. It was a quiet day in Stillwater, which, oh, by the way, on that day is a good thing. Really good thing. Just the guys signed and you move on down life's path. Oklahoma got
Didn't seem like Jim Knowles leaving affected him very much.
Maybe not in the class, but there was one of their defensive linemen that got himself in the portal. You wonder if that's trying to follow to Ohio State or, you know, and it's not like a guy, you know, sometimes in this portal stuff, it gets so overblown because you're seeing names you never even heard of, right?
Right.
This is a name that was on that defensive line for Oklahoma State, Jernigan.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't hear about that.
Jernigan got one of the defensive linemen. So, you know, is that a Jim Knowles thing or not? Well, you know, that remains to be seen. You know, because here's another thing about that portal. They don't always leave.
Yeah, it's just exploring options. Doesn't mean they're 100% committed to leave.
That's right. And also, we heard from Caleb Williams for the first time in his Sooner career. Talk about that. Wasn't probably much ado about nothing, really.
I didn't
know
what his voice sounded like.
I know. A little bit more high pitched than I thought.
Last time I heard him was when he committed.
Yeah, I guess that's
right. Way back July 4th on, what was that, 2020?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer fired last night. Wild ending to a couple of games, almost like back to back in the NBA in Dallas and Oklahoma City. And then also, you know what else happened yesterday, Jared?
What's that?
The National Archives released like 1,500 more JFK documents.
Wow, you're all over the place.
That's always the JFK thing has always fascinated me.
Okay,
we'll talk about.
Did you read them or did
you
see them?
No, not yet. I just saw the story.
Rundown on them?
Not yet.
Oh,
I'll probably dive in.
Okay, I know. Go down that rabbit hole, are you?
I know Ted Cruz tweeted, "Yay," because you know Trump accusing his dad of being a part of it back during the campaign in 2016. Anyhow, so a little JFK talk as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698 gives a call. Shoot us a text. Talk about any of those things, whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the Paragon Communications app. The app has all things radio stations. It's got the Penny News, Big Oak TV, Paragon TV, all of it. You can also have the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, go back, check out what we said on certain topics. I got to tell you, Jared, my wife and I discussed it on the way home.
Yeah.
Probably the most enjoyable Paragon Christmas party I've ever been to last night.
Had a good time. I didn't realize how hungry I was.
I skipped lunch on purpose because I knew where we were going.
I didn't, but I was still, I don't know why. I mean, you go to Simon's Catch, you don't have to be hungry. You're going to eat.
And I did.
Woo.
That steak
good
was delicious.
Food. Yes, it was.
Cooked just like I would have ordered it.
Yeah, you always worry when it's just a mass production of food for a big party that you're, you know, they didn't ask us, how do you want your steak cooked? And that kind of was like, oh boy. Came out exactly, you're right. Just exactly how I'd ordered.
Me too. I mean, it was, just very nice. And it was, I got the one that, like, if, you know, sometimes there's certain places like you could pick out your steak, you know, and then have them cook it.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like go to the grocery store. The one that I was served was just, very little of the extras that you don't really want.
Oh, that was great.
The baked potato was good.
Yeah.
The only thing that I kind of missed this year that we haven't had years past, hush puppies.
Hush puppies, yeah. Yeah, I mentioned that to my wife because I know you're not supposed to do this, but you know sometimes she'll get the fish and I'll get the steak, and can I pick at your plate?
Do a little
she'll
sharing.
Pick mine, yeah.
It specifically outlaws that on the
I know
menu
it does.
There,
I know, but I guess she said no. You had to get the fish to get the hush puppies.
Yeah,
that's what
it looked like.
I thought everybody got them.
Yeah, it's happened
that's
before.
Okay,
I get it though.
I mean, we're getting nitpicky here. That's what the only thing we're
playing.
Well, really,
you know what? And I noticed walking out of there last night, I didn't feel nearly as bogged down as I normally do from like completely overeating. Not that I didn't overeat. I mean, that clearly happened. But I think that's why I didn't cram about 45 hush puppies down my gullet.
Well, yeah.
With you know those little tubs of butter, you know, probably five or six of those.
Yes.
But yeah, food was, as Billy says, food was perfect. The company was good. Except for one black, maroon, and gold hat. It was just a really nice time. We kid. It was a lot of fun. The food was great. And it was the only, you know, two things. One, was the Hush Puppies. The other, no Sean Wilson tears. Didn't get to see him cry this year. That's normally a yearly occurrence.
Well, why? I mean, why was...
His tears of joy.
Yeah, I know.
Does he not have them this year?
I don't know. That you're right. Didn't see that.
His speech time was cut down this time.
I don't know where to go with that. I just...
Just fire off, man.
No, I'm not doing that. I've done that before on this show.
So anyway, no, it was great.
No, it was good food.
Thanks,
great.
Blake and Amber,
yes,
for
yes.
treating us to that fun night there at Simon's Catch. And, you know, you look around, and Blake makes this point every year, and he's exactly right about this. Most years you look around in that room,
yeah,
and it's the same people.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a great place to work.
Right.
And he's a good dude to work for.
Yes.
You know, and it's the people.
Yeah.
He takes care of you. And that's just another example of that last
Sometimes
night.
Sometimes that's the only time I see some of these people. You know what I mean?
Thankfully. You know how hard it'd be to have to deal with Billy on a daily basis?
God bless Jamie.
Yeah, no kidding.
God bless his wife.
That's what Kara, a couple times Kara said. Look at her. She's just shaking her head like I do to you a lot of times when you get out of hand.
We got in the car and Allie's like, boy, that Billy's a hoot. I said, I know. He's a good guy. It's like, man, no wonder it takes him so long to deliver all those papers. Because he probably stopped. And I was like, yeah, he probably stopped and talks to everybody.
That's what he said. Yeah. If it a good day, which to him was talking to people, it's like 3 or 4 hours to deliver the papers to Clinton and Arapahoe. It's not a giant area.
Yeah. No, it's not. No. Yeah.
No, that's good
and,
stuff.
I was thinking to myself, man, I know Clinton pretty well growing up there. I mowed lawns all through high school, so mm-hmm. I got to know, I know Clint like the back of my hand as far as how to get to a certain house and everything. And so I'm thinking, man, I could probably do his route quicker than what he just said. Then he started saying, well, I stop and talk to people.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he likes to do. He's a good people person, like real sociable.
And see, I don't know. We may have to get him, anyhow.
Don't say get him on the show. We don't have time.
No. I'm talking about. Maybe we need to let him in on the pregame next year.
The pregame. Oh, yeah. But you know what? We should.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Billy on the. You get Billy in on the pregaming.
Yeah.
Before the party next year.
Yeah. Absolutely. Good idea.
All right. Did you see the JFK stuff?
Well, I think I saw.
Does
something.
It fascinate you as much as it does me?
I think some people, I probably not, no. I mean, I get it. There's the conspiracy stuff and all that.
So you're of the mind that, hey, Warren Commission got it right. It was Lee Harvey Oswald all by himself committing this crime.
But it just feels like every time there's a major event, it started with JFK. I mean, you could probably go even farther back, but it started with JFK, it feels like. And then every time there's a major event, there's always a conspiracy theory to follow it. Like, or can we just not? I mean, sometimes the fact is the fact. Sometimes the answer is what they're telling us. But that's just me.
See, I'm like the exact opposite.
But I've seen the movie is intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
With
Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone movie with Kevin Costner. And I mean, an all-star of cast. I like movies like that. I like historical movies like that make you look at it differently, you know. And it gives you, and that was a good movie because it still left it open for your opinion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely was slanted toward it was some sort of conspiracy.
Well, sure, but
who's going to make a movie that just says, hey, let's follow Lee Harvey and how he did it.
Yeah.
See, I'm the exact opposite of what you said there as far as this. To me, everything else is open and shut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know there's some wackos out there that think we blew up the buildings on 9/11.
Exactly.
There's people out there.
But that's
not a mainstream theory, right? That's just a bunch of wackos. As far as JFK, though, there's like mainstream intrigue around it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just crazy people that think there's something fishy going on. And to me, that's what makes this so much different than a lot of the other things is because you haven't ever really got the answer or at least the documents to let you draw a final conclusion.
Yeah.
And they're starting to filter out. There was a big dump a couple years ago. Yesterday or the day before, I think it may have even been like 1,500 documents released by the National Archives. And, you know, there's always been that date lingering out there ever since this happened. of, okay, in 20 whatever, all of it's going to be out. And you know what? You're probably right. When everything gets out there, you'll probably go, huh, yeah, Lee Harvey did it. But until that point where you get to look at it all, it's going to keep my attention completely and utterly, because you just don't know. And with things that have happened recently surrounding, say, governmental involvement in shady dealings.
Yeah.
You could see the government. I mean, you could see Lyndon going to his buddies in the CIA or whatever and saying, hey, this guy's not going to go let us go fight in Vietnam. Get him. Right? Or some other theories. The mob, this guy, is diddling one of our wives. We've got to get him. Oh, there's all those open for interpretation, I'm telling you. Until it's all released, you're still going to have intrigue around JFK dying. And yesterday started to give a little closure. Speaking of dying, Urban Meyer got fired.
Wow.
Man, I tell you what. Listen, I am no Urban Meyer defender. I think Urban Meyer is a scumbag. Always have, always will. And would have changed my allegiance to the OSU Cowboys if somehow this would have happened a month ago and Urban Meyer ends up the coach at OU. That's how bad I loathe this guy. But some of this stuff that's surrounding his firing. Hey, Shad Khan, just say, listen, I made a mistake. We're 2-11. He's not an NFL coach. Let's move on. Instead of, I mean, that story yesterday with the ex-kicker coming out, talking about him kicking him and war. Come on, man. This is like a political hit job to where you dig up all this crap. You don't know if any of it's true, and some of it might even be made up on purpose so that you feel better about firing a guy, or what's more likely happening, you try to not have to pay that man the money that you guaranteed him in a 5-year contract.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, is trying to find the cheapest way to get rid of him, right?
So does it bother? Let me ask you this. There's all these stories starting to come out now, and one of them, you know, we heard about him calling his coaches losers. And then today, the phrasing of that term, of that phrase, is now he told them that he had a better staff at Bowling Green than he does now. I mean,
there's ridicule, then there's motivation. I mean, you know, he's trying to. Is that what he's doing there? Say, guys, I need you to step it up.
I mean, I know the answer to this, so it's almost a rhetorical question, but are we so soft as a society that calling somebody a loser means you have to get fired?
Yes.
I mean, we are that soft.
That's where we're going, man. I mean, that's what it is. It's okay, he called me a loser, cancel him.
And it's almost 100% throughout media, like, oh yeah, I mean, you can't call that guy, you can't call your coach a loser. I mean, are you serious? Loser? I mean, it's not the greatest term of all time, but it's certainly not.
There's worse
to
things,
the. Oh yeah. My gosh! Throughout the history of sports, it's hilarious.
We're
so to me.
So sensitive, we can't. Yeah.
And the truth
and
of
I'm
it
with
is,
you about Meyer. I don't like the guy. I think he's a liar. That's why he's had the nickname Urban Liar for ever since he left Florida.
Yeah, I feel right? Almost dirty kind of defending him or whatever.
When we saw what kind of players he got to Florida, we, you know, outside of Tebow, the rest weren't model citizens. And then, you know, and saying he had health issues, and then, 2 years later, winds up at Ohio State. Well, listen, the dude's a liar. Saw the lap dance stuff he got over in Cincinnati, Cleveland, wherever he was at. The dude, but – yeah, but he seems like kind of like an old-school coach that got canceled.
Well, he was never going to be accepted into the NFL, because it's becoming more and more obvious that a lot of these – the college – especially the ones that have big-time success. You look at Spurrier, you look at him and some others that have tried the NFL.
Oh, it's hard.
They're not being allowed into the fraternity. This was never going to work because the players and the media surrounding it were never going to let it. It was never going to happen. And so Shad Khan, you know, his huge mistake was making the hire in the first place. Now, Urban didn't give himself any breaks. The Tebow stuff, trying to resurrect that career in the spring. Gosh dang, what is it called?
OTAs?
Yeah, what's the other thing? Training camp.
Training.
Yeah. Getting him involved in that. Listen, That was stupid on his part, and it just set himself up. The Iowa strength coach that had gotten a lot of those, you know, the racial things in his past that everybody knew about, and then you hire him. I mean, that's he never got out of his own way, but at the same time, he was never given a fair shake whatsoever. And so it's probably best for the Jaguars to cut ties now as opposed to give him another year or two, because things are only going to get worse. But at the same time, he had no chance. He was set up to fail because a lot of the people, players included, weren't going to allow him to succeed. They just weren't going to buy in, and that's on Shad Khan from the start of thinking that it might work.
The hardest transition, I think, for college coaches to the NFL game is the college coaches letting go of the fact that these aren't kids anymore. These aren't college kids. They're grown men who see eye to eye with you, who go home to wives and children, and this is a job to them. And I think that is a hard thing to let go as a first-year head coach coming from the college game, going to the NFL.
Especially the really successful ones.
Once they could figure that out, to talk to these guys like men, like they're going, you know, this is your job, and to give them that same level of respect, that eye-to-eye like I talked about, I mean, it seems it's easier said than done. I get that. That's totally easier said than done, because it's clearly hard to do when you got someone like Urban Meyer who's had all that college success. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, naturally that's going to transfer over. That's why I think coaches like Lincoln Riley, like Bob Stoops, like, you know what? A little apprehensive about going up to that level, because I've seen how it's failed for great college coaches.
Yeah, but I think the problem for those great coaches is the reason they fail. And it's just because of when you're Spurrier, when you're Saban, when you're Meyer, you have been to the top. And so you walk in there thinking you get respect, and you don't.
Right.
You have to earn it from those guys. And, oh, by the way, yeah, in college, you've been making $7, $8, $9 million a year. Those guys you're coaching aren't making anything. Guess what? You go to the pros, those guys, a bunch of those guys in that locker room are making more than you. And so they don't think they have to listen to you. But I think it's that attitude, because if you'll notice, a guy like Kingsbury couldn't even have a winning record and make a bowl at Texas Tech. Yet he's succeeding in the NFL.
Good example.
And I think some of those guys that aren't as successful and aren't as godlike figures in their mind as, say, a Meyer or a Spurrier or a Saban, they go in not demanding the respect of themselves. They're working to try to earn it. Whereas Urban Meyer, you know good and well, he walked into that locker room at Jacksonville and said, I'm Urban Meyer. And they went, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
You haven't done anything here. Whereas a Kingsbury is trying to get accepted. And that's a reason why I think Lincoln, the quicker he goes, the better it would be to an NFL job. Because he doesn't have the skins on the wall that a lot of these other guys do, and doesn't have the reason for, you know, the gigantic ego. Now,
totally agree.
From what we're hearing as he left OU, he might have that anyway. But you know what I'm saying, though? They don't have that godlike complex that, say, you know, Meyer clearly has had, and his career ends 13 games in.
Yeah, that's – so a lot of questions. Where does he wind up? Who does Jacksonville go after? I think the wise moves for Jacksonville is you go get an NFL coach.
Oh, I mean, this feel like Eric Bieniemy or – you know, I thought – I don't think he brings up very good points very often, but one of the guys in the morning – he said, why wouldn't you go get the guy that's working with Justin Herbert right now? That makes perfect sense. You've got Trevor Lawrence. Their skill sets are very similar. Rocket arm, can move and run. Why not get that guy? Because he's succeeding with Justin Herbert out with the Chargers.
You know who's looking for a job?
Who's that?
Joe Brady? Would you give him a shot?
Absolutely not.
Because he got fired at Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, what has Joe Brady really done?
Yeah, I mean, won that title at LSU.
He wasn't even calling the plays.
He wasn't?
No. Ensminger was. Oh. The guy whose daughter died in the plane crash the morning of the game against OU. Remember that?
Yes.
Or his son-in-law or whatever it was?
Yes.
He's the one calling the plays. Joe Brady was sort of the quarterback coach.
Yeah. Well, whoever they get, they got to get an NFL guy.
Look out for Bieniemy. About time for him to get that job. Yep. I had a question on the text line about why has Pete Carroll been successful in the NFL. I would say that it's because he was an NFL guy. Pete Carroll started as an NFL. He was an NFL guy before he was in college. So to me, he went the other way. from an NFL guy to end up having success in college versus the other way around. Mm-hmm. And then as his time at USC obviously was ending before the posse got there to ride him out of town, he went back to the NFL where his roots were. So to me, that's kind of he understood that dynamic because he had been there as an NFL coach first before he ever got to USC. So that,
yes,
that would be kind of where I would be on that one.
I agree.
On that question. I get it. He had massive success as a college coach. But at the end of the day, you know what else he did? He kind of modeled USC's program more in the professional way as opposed to – I mean, because you think back
– yeah, he got his players paid.
Oh, listen.
Paid
and well, everything was wide open. I mean, think about the difference between Pete Carroll's USC practices and OU's. Even going into that Orange Bowl that year, Pete, the whole thing was open.
Right.
Come see whatever you want to. We don't care. Whereas – the paranoia on the other side was absolutely not. You can't see a thing we're working on, mm-hmm. You know. And I think that leads to more of a loosey-goosey attitude, which was clearly an advantage for USC back then. So that's kind of where I would go with that, starting out as a pro guy. Man, last night in the NBA, I know we don't talk a whole bunch about it because it's just not worthy of talking about right now. But within about a 2 or 3 minute span, that game down in Dallas between the Lakers and the Mavs, and then the Thunder Pelicans, they end like almost not simultaneously, but pretty close to simultaneously, with just incredibly awesome finishes. So we'll start in chronological order, and interestingly enough, they both have ties to the state of Oklahoma, obviously with the Thunder, and then the way that
isn't that funny how that works.
That the game and the Lakers ended. Let's hear how it went. One of the greatest, Mike Breen, there on ESPN's coverage.
James doubled, finds Ellington, corner to Westbrook, final seconds, out to Reeves, three-pointer, bang! Reeves gives him a three-point lead with 9/10 of a second remaining, no timeouts for Dallas. Bullock from half court, oh, off the mark, and the Lakers survive in overtime.
That Reeves that Mike Breen's referring to is none other than Hillbilly Kobe, Austin Reeves, former Oklahoma star, as he buried the three to win the game for the Lakers in overtime over the Dallas Mavericks, 107-105. You know, it was – 104, I'm sorry, it's tied. Just an incredible play all the way around. You saw Westbrook with the chance to shoot – a baseline three, one of which he had just knocked down the previous possession and didn't take the bait. Drove it in the paint, kicked it out. Reeves made that shot and absolutely got hammered on the arm with no call. I mean, if you ever wondered about what it takes to get a foul called at the end of a game.
I have no idea.
In an NBA game like that, you saw, I mean, he got literally knocked to the floor by the arm. But so Austin Reeves knocks that one down in Dallas. And then literally minutes later, in Oklahoma City, this happened.
Get it in. No timeouts. The ball is inbounded to Shea. Temple did not foul. Shea on the step back still buries the three. And it's tied at 110 with 1.4 seconds.
And you know what's interesting about that? He was trying.
Oh, Graham! Count the bucket for the win. Devontae Graham walks it off.
Yeah, take your thought, throw it away, because you don't have time to give your analysis.
He was trying. Michael Cage was trying to get it in there. That was on Bally Sports, the Oklahoma City crew, Chris Fisher and Michael Cage. He was trying to get it in there. I'm sure, you know, what was amazing to me about that, you can tell it's very late seconds in those games because neither Dallas nor New Orleans had a timeout at their disposal to be able to advance it to half court. But it just incredible finishes. You talked about, tell them about what you saw tweeted out by the OU
Twitter. Austin Reeves, he seems to play really well in Dallas. If Dallas was smart, they would have drafted him or set up a trade to get him because he had that game winner against TCU early in the conference play last year. And it kind of springboarded them towards a nice little run, got them in top 10 rankings towards the end of that run. But Austin Reeves, he seems to be a nice compliment off the bench for L.A., doesn't he?
Yeah, if he can shoot, he can. He was 5 of 6 from 3 last night, and that's what they need. surrounding LeBron, Russ, and obviously Anthony Davis. One thing you noticed out there, and this is just so infuriating, it has to be if you're a Laker fan. It almost has to be if you're an Anthony Davis fan. Because the truth is, the Lakers will be their optimal selves with the current roster if Anthony Davis will play the five. And that gets DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard off the damn floor. They don't need to be out there. Anthony Davis, play the five. You've got LeBron at the four. Russ can have the ball, or they can go back and forth, whatever, and then have shooting around them.
Yeah.
And on the floor last night, you saw who was out there. It was Davis, LeBron, Russ, and then you had Wayne Ellington, and you had Austin Reeves. Ellington knocked down a three to send it into overtime, and Reeves knocked down a three to win it for the Lakers. It makes zero sense for Anthony Davis to do anything but play the five, but he is so hesitant to do it, and it's just the way it goes. On the other end for the Thunder, they were ahead most of the game. They lost that lead. Shai just threw that thing up from near the half line, thinking he was going to get fouled and trying to get three free throws. And you can even see Garrett Temple, the guard for New Orleans, as Shai's shooting it, he's holding his hands, his palms to the sky at the referee right next to him going, "I fouled him before he shot it. What are you doing?" as the ball goes in. So, it's just one of those, but as the big Aristotle Shaq said one time, one lucky shot deserves another lucky shot. And Devontae Graham from 60 feet at the buzzer knocked it in. Great loss for the Thunder, as they are now at the bottom of the Western Conference standings after that loss to New Orleans,
right,
with eight wins. Right now, throw the ping pong balls in. The Thunder in the bottom three, which means they have the best chance at a good pick. That's what most people want. But you know what? Some losses are better than others. That one was a lot more fun to watch as opposed to the 73-point record-setting beatdown a couple weeks ago.
True. Very true. Yeah. That you'd rather take a loss like that than that humiliating record-setting loss. You don't want to be on the other side of a record like that.
You know what? I'd rather have one of those, 73, or a three-quarter beating you, than say just losing by 15 and it be a boring game.
True. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Those fans got their money's worth going.
Oh, yeah, on that one and the other one. Yeah. You get your money's worth watching an all-time record set.
I guess.
Especially if the Thunder are on the road and it doesn't have to happen here in the Paycom Center. That was NBA. It was just a fun 10 minutes there on NBA. Let's go back to signing day. The early signing day is basically over for most of the players in high school football signing to go play in the colleges. And just a monumental story happened after we got off the air yesterday. As soon as we got off the air, I started looking to see who all had officially signed, and all of a sudden, you see this smoke created that Travis Hunter, who was the number one player overall in the Rivals rankings, is he really going to go to Jackson State and play for Coach Prime, Deion Sanders? No way. That's not really going to happen. And about 30 minutes later, it did. And this is clearly a nod to the NIL, because as soon as that happened, now the question is, what did he get? I mean, isn't that amazing? It's not, he wanted to go play for one of the HBCUs. It wasn't that. Nobody believes that. And nobody even really believes he wants to go play for Coach Prime. It's not that either. What did he get? And it turns out most believe he got a multi-million dollar deal to film a documentary while he's at Jackson State, which is one of those HBCUs, a historically black college. From Barstool Sports, which is okay, whatever. It's a media conglomerate, but But then the second name was the one that kind of raised my eyebrows, and it's Penn National Gaming, which is a gambling conglomerate making machines and all kinds of stuff to do with that industry. Did you ever think that we would see gambling paying high school recruits and see it happening publicly?
When the NIL was announced.
Never let my mind wander even to the gambling side of it.
Oh, I did. Absolutely, I did. Yeah. I thought everything's fair game. Everything is. I figured it would be somebody like Caesars. You know, you're seeing the Caesars stuff with their app and all that stuff. I figured it would be somebody major like that, Caesars Gaming. But I didn't even know who Penn National Gaming was before yesterday. But I had a feeling. I mean, anything's on the table. Anything. anything. Nike went and signed their first person. It wasn't a football player. It was a soccer player out of a UCLA. But that's coming, you know, and it's probably going to be an Oregon player, thanks to Phil Knight. But anything's possible with this NIL stuff.
Do you really think, I mean, because, you know, the call after call yesterday after us was all about it's changing the landscape of college athletics, changing the landscape. It's just totally different now. But then you hear Jimbo, who, by the way, A&M, I think, overtook Alabama in the ESPN rankings for the number one class. He said, what are you talking about? This NIL stuff had always been happening just under the table.
Sure.
But, I mean, are we really supposed to sit here and believe that recruits before this, people were paying them millions of bucks? I don't believe that. I don't think it took millions of dollars in the past. $100,000, you know, a sack full of $100,000 could do the job. Now this is just upping the ante. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I mean, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, my gosh, this is just completely changing the landscape, because I think we all have thought players are getting paid. It's just now where the sources of that money is coming and it being public, I think, is the difference. And it's hard to kind of fathom and it's hard to kind of stomach, even though you sort of thought there was a pretty dirty underbelly of college athletics to begin with.
Yeah, you didn't want to believe it, but it was there. I mean, there was brown bags full of cash, you know, deals, stuff like that. Absolutely. You know, or situations set up, you know, okay, when you're done with college, you're going to get this. We'll line it up for you. You know, behind, you know, bending the rules, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, everybody had their certain way of doing it. Here's what's amazing to me, though. Okay, so, you know, this is obviously Texas was front and center with their pancake factory scheme, going in with the offensive lineman, $50,000 a year from a philanthropic group and all of that stuff, right? That's kind of a new age, great, really great thinking by them. Why aren't we hearing about this stuff at Alabama?
Because the emperor is preventing that from getting out.
I mean, because we're not supposed to sit here and believe that. I mean, as much as you would love to believe that players are going to say Alabama, or Dabo was pretty upset about everything going on. I mean, he's leading the charge of everything's going to hell in a handbasket during his signing day presser yesterday. But, I mean, is he really trying to get us to believe that they're just getting the only players in the country that just happen to be the highest-rated ones, by the way, the only ones that want to go to school for winning and championships as opposed to getting a little bit of money? Are we really supposed to believe that?
No. I mean, they're getting some.
I mean, listen, Mike Krzyzewski tried to convince us that he got Zion because it's Duke, not because of money. Come the hell on. I mean, he's getting offered $250,000 everywhere else. So he's just going to go to Duke because it's Duke. Give me a break, bro. Give me a break.
Exactly.
But I will say this. I mean, Saban, just like Saban does, he's the best at everything. And it does feel like some of these guys go for the money, and his guys go to Alabama, but also get some money. Does that make sense?
I think the end game, too, is what Saban is able to sell is you come to Alabama, look who I've put into the NFL. You know what I mean? So I think that's a big part of it, too. Go, I put X amount of players in the NFL every year. You could be one of those guys when it's your time.
Oh, I think there's definitely that selling point, and that's why, I mean, here's another, that's how the big schools all got these players. The big schools get those players because they're who they are. But no one's going to sit here and think they don't also pay them a little bit of money. And maybe this is a way, you know, we've talked about this widening the gap between the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to see if that's really what's going to happen, or if this gives some of the smaller schools, or, you know, this, even within the conferences, even within the Big 12, you know, you've got OU and Texas raking in all the money, but does this give Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Baylor, whoever it is, more of a level playing field because they can pay two, or
yeah, that's
up
saying.
To, you know,
yeah.
But the truth of it is, we're hearing all about a few guys,
right?
And I think the difference now is going to be there's ways to get everybody something.
Yeah. I mean, my first initial reaction to the NIL was we're going to have large market and small market football in college, or you know what I mean? Kind of like,
yeah. But at what point? At what point does that run out?
I see what you're saying.
And at what point does, you know, somebody, listen, you think Ohio State's pretty pleased about paying Quinn Ewers $1.3 million right about now? What did they get? No snaps. I mean, enough of that, and people are going to get burned, and they're going to go, no, I'm out. So I think it's – I wonder if it's going to continue to go this way, or if eventually it's like a bubble where it'll just burst. And then it's back to this is all much ado about nothing after a couple of years.
Yeah. What kind of wasn't there some legislation that Florida State lawmakers, I mean, within hours of this happening, that they, I didn't read into it. I just saw a headline that said after hours after he decommitted,
already trying to get some
control over it. So it wouldn't happen again, obviously. But I didn't read the legislation. I would have to do that for another show. But then that begs the question of, you know, when, you know, we're going to start seeing some legislation, some laws, state laws, local laws changed. You know, we mentioned the Ewers thing. He was able to go up to Ohio, you know, not play his final season as a senior in high school, because he had the opportunity to make over $1 million up in the state of Ohio as an early enrollee. So when does the trickle-down effect come to the high school level? That's what I'm saying. To keep kids in state, to keep kids to get the – you know what I mean? The ripple effect isn't done yet is what I'm saying.
Oh, no. Pandora's box is open, and there's nothing to stop it because there's no rules on it.
There's none.
There's still none. I mean, the only rule is kind of a – well, you can't go over fair market value. Well, what's fair market value? Is $2 million for Travis Hunter not well over fair market value? He hadn't done anything other than be a really good athlete in high school. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I just, as much as it looks like this is totally changing, and like you said, all of a sudden you're going to see places like Austin, Texas, Los Angeles, Miami, those big glamour cities with college football teams in them prosper. I don't know if that's going to end up being the case, though, because as much money as there is right now, how fed up do you get if you pay a bunch of money to say just for Malachi Nelson and he does nothing?
Yeah.
And he transfers out. I mean, think about Rattler. If he follows the path of Rattler, do you think that those guys spending that big time money are going to think they got any sort of return on investment? Absolutely not.
I did hear he gave the cars back.
Whatever.
I'm just saying. Didn't know if that was part of this contract he signed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's another thing.
If you leave the school, you got to give the cars back.
The thing about Hunter that I think is going to be really interesting is there a contract, and did he sign that prior to, like, was that money contingent upon him going to Jackson State? Because if that's the case, that's illegal. That cannot be the way that these inducements are made.
That's a good point.
They cannot be that
way. Was the
deal
off the table if he signed with Florida State?
Well, there's no documentary to be made at a historically black college at that point.
True.
So if that's the case, and he had already signed that contract before he signed his national letter of intent, that's trouble. It's big trouble.
Yeah.
Because then you're inducing a player to go to university. I mean, semantics and the cat's out of the bag, but that's just the one letter of the law is that.
Full disclosure, I didn't know about that documentary stuff. I knew that he was getting some money from some NIL deals, but I didn't know about the documentary stuff. So before I knew about that, I was questioning, does this get Coach Prime a big-time job because he just showed that he can get a big-time recruit to a college like Jacksonville State? Obviously, he didn't go there for Coach Prime.
No. It didn't matter who the coach was. Now, did Dion being the coach may help Barstool and Penn Gaming come up with this plan? Sure.
Yeah.
How ironic it is that Dion stole this guy from his alma mater.
That, I saw him burning
Prime
Sanders jerseys.
Question on the text line. I assume you're talking about Kobe McKenzie. As it says, did the kid from Texas that flipped from Texas to OU sign with OU? The answer to that is yes. So if that's what you're talking about, the big-time linebacker recruit out of Lubbock. He was actually the first commit in OU's 2022 class. Way back in January of 2020, pre-pandemic, he made a visit to OU in January, committed, and was, like I said, the first one. Then after the after Lincoln Riley left, he committed to Texas, and then that lasted about a day. And then Brent Venables went down and met with him in home, and he is back. Yeah, so, yeah, Kobe McKenzie did sign with Oklahoma yesterday. He was, like, the second one in after Jaden Gibson from Florida. So, yes, the answer to that question is yes, he did sign with OU.
Not a horrible class.
Yeah, both ways. Haul. I got to tell you, I really like the focus that Mike Gundy and his staff are making on the state of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look out there at guys, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, you hear Colin Oliver, you know, a little chip on his shoulder because maybe he wanted to go to Oklahoma, but they wouldn't offer him. They didn't think he was good enough. So he goes to OSU, bam, he's maybe the defensive freshman of the year nationally with what he did at Oklahoma State. And they've opened up that pipeline. It started with Trace Ford, another guy that OU didn't think was quite good enough to be a Sooner. Goes to Oklahoma State. Now, he was out this year with the knee, but that guy has been a monster when he's played. Oliver follows, and now yesterday the two Shetron brothers are there as well from Edmond Santa Fe. So that's a pretty good pipeline Oklahoma State's got flowing their way on the in-state route. OSU had 7 of the top 20 in-state. And a bunch of those guys have really made differences. I mean, Malcolm Rodriguez is one that they unearthed. You know, it's funny because we used to kind of hear those stories about OU. You know, we think of the Teddy Lehmans, there's a bunch of Dan Cody, just different guys that were good high school football players in Oklahoma, not national recruits, that OU unearthed and built into great football players in college. Oklahoma State's kind of taken that mantle lately of getting those guys in state and transforming them into really good players collegiately. And I think it's proving that, yeah, you know, you want to chase this or chase that star-wise, but if you do the due diligence within this state, you're finding guys that can really play on the collegiate level.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier to recruit them than say you could stay here at home and we could play at a high level. You could play at a high level and everybody could watch you. Like I said, I think it was yesterday, I'll say it again, I wonder with the new coaching staff at OU, will that philosophy change for Brent Venables and his staff? Will they look more in-state more than what Riley and Grinch did? Or will they be more on a national level? I mean, we're hearing all the talks that it's going to be a shifting from California to Florida more. But I don't know. That's what we're going to find out with the next recruiting class is – how much of a focus in-state does Venables give? And that'd be really fun to talk about in-state as far as what we do for a living is, you know, recruiting wars in-state between OU and OSU. Shoot, that'd be a lot of fun.
100%. And right now, you know, the answer to your question you would think would be yes, because the time that we're talking about where Oklahoma found those guys, unearthed those guys, who was on the coaching staff and who was doing a bunch of that? It was Brent Venables.
Yeah.
And so you would think – that he knows the value of that. And, you know, that's always – listen, I've been reading for years on the message boards or just talking to people. You know, these guys from out of state, they don't have the love for the school. They don't love Oklahoma State. They don't love Oklahoma, and so they don't try as hard. I mean, that's a bunch of hogwash to me on a certain level. But there are situations, and I think you're seeing it right now with the defections from some of these guys – at Oklahoma after Riley left, it's clear they came to play for the coach, not the school.
Right.
But I think that happens everywhere, and it doesn't just have to be an in-state, out-of-state guy. Gentry Williams didn't sign yesterday for Tulsa, Washington.
Hmm.
And he would have if Riley was still there. So, I mean, that you know, it's both ways. It's in-state and out-of-state. But those are the types of guys, the Gentry Williams, the Chris McClellan who got out and went to Florida, defensive tackle from Owosso. We see Dax Hill, which OSU and OU both missed on. OSU had his brother on the team before he committed to Michigan. You know, Josh Proctor's a guy that was a huge recruit nationally in the secondary, a place where both teams have struggled defensively from right there in Owosso. And so I think for Mike Gundy, he's doing a lot better job of shutting off the borders of the state. And maybe with Venables' help, that can happen completely. And you don't see the high-end talent from Oklahoma sneak out of here and go to other places. Now, we'll say this. The one thing about those guys that have left in the past, outside of, say, Dax Hill, Proctor was pretty good until he got hurt. Now he's been hurt for about 2 years at Ohio State and seemingly recruited over. But for the most part, those guys do nothing. When they leave, they just don't. It's like they got this giant chip on their shoulder against the state schools, and they do nothing. But a good haul for both schools, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, both in the top 25 of the 247, at least after early signing day. And we'll see what can happen between now and February. I know Dax Hill was one that, or I'm sorry, Gentry Williams is one that hasn't signed yet. Oklahoma's still looking for, and then also Devin Campbell, five-star offensive tackle or offensive lineman from down in Texas. He's down to OU and Texas, and he's going to make his choice on the regular signing day in February. So still a chance for both staffs to supplement what they did yesterday. But for OSU, quiet. All 17 they thought were going to sign did. Nothing crazy happened, so that's always a good day. And then for OU, being able to piecemeal it back together with Riley leaving so late in the process, you got to feel good about both schools and what they did on the recruiting trail, at least for 2022. And now portal and that second signing day is what's up next.
Yeah, portal is always the thing for both universities, and then the second signing day. But I look past that. I'm already looking forward to a full year of recruiting for Venables and his staff and see what he can get. Can he get another top 10 class, and can Mike Gundy keep it going with his staff?
Yeah.
And the in-state stuff is very intriguing to me.
Because, honestly, it feels like yesterday, golly, what was there? There's going to be like almost 25 guys signed with D1s, and 22 of them, I think, are going to be Power 5. That's a high number for this state.
It is. It is.
Really high. All right, everybody have a great Thursday. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.